We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, and welcome back to the only podcast that got to jump the queue to the front of the vaccine line before your grandma, but, you know, she's the head shaman of the Byron Bay chapter of QAnon, or at least the Australian version of QAnon, the QAnon. Functions pretty much the same as QAnon, but it has actual influence on the leader of the country, who's built his life's belief system on an elaborate series of increasing fantastical stories that loosely tie together to form a connected canon. Not to mention that this is an Olympic level podcast, and we've been approved for the newest Olympic sport, the podcastathon. So, wish us luck. We're going for gold. We'll probably get bronze. My name is Matt Harvey, and I'll be your host for the next however long this takes, as we look at some of the strangest news and explore the weirdest side of the news you know. I have been very busy lately, but not too busy for you guys, so let's get into the headlines. I will once again be the bearer of weird news. Tinder, Flappy Bird for getting laid, is looking to release a few new features, starting with a "Are you sure?" question intended to stop harmful messages before they happen. Now, this is a great idea. If there's one thing that will stop angry and self-possessed people from sending an abusive message, it's a small box that takes 3 seconds to click and makes them angrier that they have to click it. Are you sure? Well, no, I'm not anymore. Now I want to write more words for making me take an introspective journey. That's just made me angrier. Should be about as impactful as the "Are you 18? Button that you find on porn sites. You can just imagine Tinder being like, "Well, we asked if he was sure. And he said, yes. What more could we do? What more do you want from us?" Speaking of checking if you're sure, Tinder also wants to give people the power to access background checks. Now, I certainly do hope that they install the "Are you sure?" technology first, because as the engineer who designs this feature goes on to install it, a big box should appear that says, "Are you sure you want to give people this much power to access and private information?" Are Twitter employees not allowed to use Twitter? Most of the bad stuff that happens on their platform. It just takes a little bit of introspection, ironically. Bees in the Netherlands have been trained to detect COVID-19 infections.
Bees?
Hey, Netherlands, do you want us to take you seriously? Because you aren't showing your workings out. You can't go from Amsterdam, windmills and tulips, and then do a hard left into master of all things bees.
Bees?
Look, I know we need to save the bees. And to do that, we need to give them more purpose, because apparently flowering most plants and fruits is enough for us to care. Apparently. But I don't want my next COVID test to look like this.
Oh, no, not the bees! Not the bees! Ah!
That nasal swab is intrusive enough as it is. Thank you very much. A new national flagship is going to be commissioned by the UK government in a bid to boost British trade and industry globally at a reported cost of £200 million. Well, no wonder they couldn't afford to give hungry kids school meals during a pandemic. They were saving up for a new boat. Boats don't just pay for themselves, you know, guys. It takes a lot of hard work and a lot of effort. A Dutch couple moved into Europe's first fully 3D printed house. They say it's a huge step down from their previous 9D printed house, but it's going to be nice to take less than an hour to get to the kitchen every morning. The California Appeals Court ruled Amazon can be held liable for third-party sellers' faulty products. Now if only we can figure out how to make them liable for their own dodgy behavior. I mean, this really is just putting them on a trial basis of responsibility, much like getting a child a plant to see if they can keep something alive if it doesn't openly complain. It's actually word for word the motivational speech that Amazon managers receive upon promotion. Think of this workforce as a cactus. You barely need to water them, and if they are stressed, they will make a noise, but nobody will ever hear it. That's a true fact. You can look that up. Switzerland is going to allow female members of the army to wear women's underwear for the first time in an effort to boost recruitment. Previously, recruits were expected to shape their own underpants using their standard issue knife. But they have returned to their neutral state that they are famous for, except for closing their borders to Jewish refugees and laundering Nazi gold. But hey, we all had to do something during the war. Scott Morrison told a Christian conference that he was called to do God's work as PM. The very real thing that actual serial killers often say. And the literal thing that Goldman Sachs claimed in 2009. You remember 2009? That was the year after they helped create the global financial crisis. Although God and Jesus were against the moneylenders, so if destroying all money means nobody can lend money, that could technically be considered God's work, I guess. A Japanese town got a COVID-19 grant, and instead of using it to support the town, they used it to build a giant squid statue. They claim the statue is to drive tourism to the town, presumably taking inspiration from Australia's big things, including pineapple, merino, and prawn. This one will be labelled the biggest waste of stimulus money. If they really wanted to drive tourism, what they've got to do now is they've got to build a giant robot that tourists can operate in teams of five to fight the squid to the death, honouring Japan's biggest cultural export, kaiju battles. It's a real shame that the Olympians are locked in that Olympic village. I'd like to see them go down there and use their Olympic skills powers to fight the squid. The Harry, formerly known as Prince, has called for equitable distribution of COVID vaccines. Because as a 30-something with no job or royal access, he has realised that he is way at the back of the queue line and should probably do something about it. While still, nobody has called for frontline supermarket workers who battled Karens and anti-maskers to get their fast pass to the front of the Vax Mountain, and I don't understand how we've forgotten this. NASA's rover has made breathable oxygen on Mars. Now don't get too excited, it has made 5 grams of the gas, equivalent to what an astronaut on Mars would need to breathe for roughly 10 minutes, or just enough time for Elon Musk to send a tweet that will probably cost him billions in shares, probably calling a Martian a pedo or something clever like that. Speaking of Mars, China has landed its own rover on Mars, probably looking for a new spot to build a re-education camp that journalists won't find. It's fine, I'm probably never going to China. Don't worry about it. Crown has been fined $1 million. And you can tell we are really strapped for cash when we're making Crown pay fines. Man, it looks like they're going to have to bust open that glass tube full of dollar coins that they've been saving since they opened. I think it's their piggy bank. paying in coins is really going to piss the government off, though. Wales! The UK country is so forgotten, they don't even have a national stereotype. The Welsh town of Bangor has begun its campaign to out-progressive New Zealand by electing the youngest ever mayor of Wales and the world's first non-binary mayor, Owen Hercom. I do hope I'm saying that right. I really feel bad. Hercom. Seen here, donning the mayoral chain and looking like a dapper Flavor Flav. I salute you, Owen. But this is just the beginning of the Welsh's vicious attempt to be thought of as kinder than Canada, as they introduce a universal basic income scheme, meaning adults, regardless of their means, will receive a regular sum of money. First Minister and Welsh Herald Bishop Mark Drakeford said the pilot would see whether the promises that basic income holds out are genuinely delivered in people's lives. Those promises are being able to pay rent and eat food. Ooh, spicy. And maybe if you prepare in advance, get an education. Oh, let's slow down here. Various versions of the scheme have been trialled around the world. In Western Kenya, a 12-year trial is taking place where every adult is being paid $22 a month to see if it can help lift them out of poverty. In Finland, 2,000 unemployed people were given 560 euro per month for 2 years. Now, researchers found the schemes left those happier and less stressed, but did not aid them in finding work. Instead, they all tried to become podcasters, and the world has enough podcasts, if I'm being perfectly frank. Thanks for listening. And by not aiding them to find work, they actually really do mean less willing to take crappy jobs where assholes yell at them for little to no money. And I think that's an important distinction, because self-respect is really more of an upper class privilege. We can't just be doling it out to any old person, making them feel like they have worth and shouldn't be called a cunt, and then have a glass thrown at them in the head by an angry mother, or any other number of non-specific scenarios that don't directly apply to the person saying them. Now, in its manifesto, Plaid Cymru, and I did look up how to say that, but I'm still not sure that I said it right. Plaid Cymru, a Welsh nationalist and social democratic political party, supported a universal basic income in order to prepare for the future where work may have a different role in the economy as a result of automation and the application of AI-related technologies. I see Wales is making an early bid to not be the official joke country when the robots take over, with an early and aggressive, hey, we care about people campaign. Well played, Welsh. Well played. But I see what you're doing. A Texas woman recently learned that she was charged with a felony after not returning a VHS tape for over 20 years. Karen McBride, a former Oklahoma resident, faced a felony embezzlement charge for not returning Sabrina the Teenage Witch to a movie rental store in Norman in 1999. The woman was told she could get the charge expunged from her record and was then heard to exclaim, "Oh, so this is what it sounds like when white privilege cries." Alabama has failed to reverse a ban on yoga in schools, as conservatives say they fear a rise in Hinduism. Or at least, that's what they said. Really, they were just trying to get rid of white parents who end conversations with Namaste. The Alabama Board of Education voted in 1993 to prohibit school personnel from using any techniques that involve the induction of hypnotic states, guided imagery, meditation, or yoga. Presumably out of fear, it had turned them into late career Beatles enthusiasts, and the world doesn't need another number nine. We just don't need it. But if you ask me, fears of yoga-induced indoctrination are a bit of a stretch. However, the bill to lift the ban on yoga in Alabama schools would still prohibit namaste greetings and chanting, a movement that I am actually attempting to co-sign on in meetings with friends and co-workers. Namaste? Nah, mago. In a study published in the Journal of Med, researchers demonstrated that the delivery of oxygen gas or oxygenated liquid through the rectum provided vital rescue to two mammalian models of respiratory failure. Or in other words, mammals can breathe through their anus in emergencies. Takanori Takebe of the Tokyo Medical and Dental University and the Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center said, although the side effects and safety need to be thoroughly evaluated in humans, our approach may offer a new paradigm to support critically ill patients with respiratory failure. So the next time someone's trying to suffocate you, just wiggle down your pants and get your butt in the air for some emergency ass air. Or maybe this is just a way to get anti-maskers to keep their mask on. If they feel like they're genuinely in danger, they can just get their ass out and say that they're breathing emergency air. Amazon announced Working Well, a new program that it claims helps make its workplaces safe by drastically cutting injury rates by fortifying each worker's mind. The most important part of a physical job. Their minds will be fortified inside robot bodies where they will be put in a virtual simulation where they will believe that they are Amazon employees working a never-ending shift. It'll be much like working in an actual Amazon factory, except now their bodies won't fall prey to those silly human foibles like needing to eat and poop. The program will feature physical and mental activities, wellness exercises, and healthy eating support that are scientifically proven to help them recharge and re-energize. Part of the program will see the rollout of what Amazon is calling Amazen. Whoa! We did it! We did it, guys! We did it! Right here, your boy right here, for all your dystopian future needs, come to us, the bearer of Weird News Industries. It's our newest subsidiary, Capitalist Predictions. Using our patented, simply stating the worst thing that they could possibly do technology, but with fun jokes, we can start successfully predicting even the most abhorrent behaviors from your capitalist swine. Get on board. It's a good time. Amazon isn't stopping there though. In its continued attempt to avoid having to do anything that will cost them money, but it seems like they're being supportive, they are now backing marijuana legalization and dropping weed testing for some jobs. Because new studies have shown that marijuana is good for treating PTSD. Speaking of treating workers poorly, first off, gig worker news! Menu log. Company happy to pay Snoop Dogg a week's worth of marijuana money, $5.3 million to do a jingle, has promised to trial an employment model for its workers in Sydney's CBD district. The employment model they will trial is trial by combat. The employees are all gathered into the MCG, as it's the biggest arena in the country, and if you live in a different state, you'll be expected to pay for your own expenses, because that's how these companies work. You pay for your own petrol. At which point, they will battle each other while dodging lasers, because basically that's like doing two jobs at once. The contractor, who is the most flexible, will be given employee status. Like other companies in the on-demand sector, Menulog claims flexibility remains fundamental to their mission. That mission being maximizing money and exploitation for fun and riches. They are the best of friends, after all. Given workers in the gig economy are deemed independent contractors, it is not possible for them to even operate as employees within an award system as it currently operates. Not to mention, a spokesperson for Menulog actually told Michael West Media that the company didn't have any more detail on its proposal. So it doesn't even know what it wants to do. These guys genuinely have embraced the Pirates of the Caribbean lifestyle.
Take what you can, give nothing back.
And when it comes to the working status of their employees, well,
the code is more what you'd call guidelines than actual rules.
And when it comes to helping their contractors,
I'm disinclined to acquiesce to your request.
Deliveroo CEO Ed McManus told a Senate Select Committee hearing earlier this month that the company routinely calls workers riders. Now, use of such language is pretty important because it means any reforms would be strictly around riders or partners, as Uber calls its riders. The company's suggested reforms do not include anything resembling the usual rights given to employees. I mean, come on, baby steps, guys. You can't expect them to be completely compliant with a pre-existing system of underpaying workers that has been in place for over 30 years. They aren't miracle workers after all. They're just shaking things up in the tech industry. Disruptors. And what they're really disrupting now is their employees' paychecks. Rideshare and delivery drivers are paid per job, not per hour. Figures show a food delivery driver typically undertakes 2 to 2.5 jobs per hour and earns on average $10 to $12 per delivery. And that's during peak demand periods. And if we're being honest, guys, at those rates, they'll never earn any money. Come on. Pick up your rates, guys. Ride your bike faster. Pump those legs and you'll earn that livable wage. Go to spin class or something. Maybe you'll be able to write some of it off as a tax deduction, assuming you actually earn any wages to begin with. A March 2021 analysis by consultants Accenture, commissioned by Uber Eats, not at all suspicious, found that, on average, Sydney delivery workers took home $21.55 per hour during key meal times. Interesting. However, figures from a 2020 survey by the Transport Workers Union found that the average gross hourly rate was $17.11. $17.11 is a gross hourly wage. Completely disgusting. Not even close to the actual minimum wage, which is $19.84 per hour, plus a minimum 25% casual loading because there's no guaranteed hours, because we enjoy flexibility in this industry, bringing the total of $24.80 that these guys should be pocketing. So, even if the absolutely trustworthy and not even slightly questionable analysis commissioned by the company, who looks better if they come off as paying above the minimum wage, is true, they are still behind. Also, they receive no benefits or legal protections. And an ongoing New South Wales Parliament inquiry into the gig economy heard that riders had their pay cut during the pandemic, down to as little as $8 for 2 trips. Now, how many of us ordered in? Raise your hands. Come on, raise your hands, be honest. How many of us ordered in multiple times a week. Well, congratulations, you are supporting the gig economy. You are all now job creators. I hope you're feeling good about yourselves. This is basically like reverse surge charges. The more in demand you are, the less you get paid. This unregulated piracy allows companies like, oh, if I was to just pick a company out at random, Ola, for example, to suspend its insurance scheme for drivers to cut costs, as it did last June. They could, and there'd be nothing any of them could do about it, because independent contractors are not considered employees, and they are not covered by the legal protections offered by the Fair Work Act. You can, however, find them on the front page of the Unfair Work Act, right up there with giving politicians the power to approve their own pay raises despite doing a terrible job, and making people work inconsistent contracts for cash under the table and expecting them to subsidize their wages with tips in a non-tipping culture. Page 1 of the Unfair Work Act. You can look this up. I can't make this sort of stuff up, guys. Now, a key difference between an employee and an independent contractor is the contractor can subcontract and delegate jobs, as well as have control over work, i.e. when, where, and how long they work for, whereas an employee cannot do this and has absolutely no control over any part of their job or life ever. The nature of contractor work could potentially allow for employment as a casual worker. However, this would mean gig workers still wouldn't be entitled to key minimum standards such as paid sick leave, unless Dictator Dan's attempts to provide casual workers with sick pay that they can carry between jobs takes off nationally, converting Australia from a freedom-loving, economy-first-at-all-costs neglectathon to some sort of socialist dictatorship. Am I right? However, all companies in the gig economy are obsessed with the belief that flexibility is the key to its operations and that it must be retained even in the face of regulation. And they aren't wrong. That flexibility means staff aren't really staff, but more of a loosely associated affiliate program. They have the same relationship to their employees as my first job at the MCG did. Show up if you want, but know that you are replaceable. That was genuinely the attitude. Deliveroo argues that riders overwhelmingly want flexibility, a fact acknowledged by the TWU survey, which found that only 47% of gig workers surveyed wanted to be classified as employees. And as a tech company, they are ruled by one of the major rules of the internet. You can only care about one thing at a time, ever. As soon as they care about money, obviously they've stopped caring about flexibility. And so as long as they care about flexibility, then they couldn't possibly care about money. You've got to choose, affiliates. It's just too many causes at once. You couldn't possibly care for them all at once. I've seen it on the internet. Now, a task force has been set up to improve rider / affiliate / any word that doesn't mean benefits and pay safety after 5 delivery riders died on the job in the space of 2 months has suggested only minor changes to the industry. Now, identified areas of improvement include one action listed as improved bag ergonomics, which was described by advocates for delivery riders as an exercise in futility, which I would say is glib, mean, and unnecessary. Now, I can't say for certain, but I am pretty confident that if I were to contract the services of celebrated celebrity medium and fraud, John Edwards, and use his much beloved skills on behalf of these delivery drivers, we would find that the last thoughts of the now dead riders, as they were mowed down in the service of bringing you food that could have been picked up by yourself, but it was cold, and you were already taking off your pants, and fuck it, the technology exists, would have been, geez, this is an indignity. If only they had made these bags a bit more ergonomic, then I'd be able to be callously mowed down while on duty with much more comfort. An important last thought for anybody. Other actions in the draft include improved app design, app refinement, which one might argue are just someone squeezing the remaining juice out of the thesaurus to get to 6 improvements, because 5 improvements doesn't really give off a vibe of we actually care. But 6, now that's a number that says, hey, this is for you, not for us. Also suggested was easy to read graphics and customizable safety messages. Yes, customizable safety messages. Hey, how do you, delivery driver, feel about the last thing that you read being the hilarious warning, danger ahead, stop, hammer time? Because it could be, with our range of customizable safety messages. And finally, the not at all vague sounding business research, with the intention being to investigate the impact of extreme weather, incentives, and time pressure on safety. An investigation that I can do for you right now. They're fucking bad. They will all negatively impact your riders in every single way. Research done. Money, please! I do hope your business research extends into the hotly contested field of reporting when your workers die on the job. Because as food delivery company Hungry Panda, who had a worker killed in Sydney, had their HR manager admit in New South Wales Parliament, she was unaware that they had a legal obligation to report that he had died on the job. This is a general note to all businesses. Hey, when one of your employees dies on the job, you're obliged to report it. Except for you, Disney. You can keep sneaking people out of the underground death tunnels. You're all good, as long as you keep making those sweet, sweet Marvel movies and TV shows. How good was Loki? Having a great time. Notably, there was no mention of addressing time pressure in the action plan's list of actions, despite it being cited as the leading cause of deaths and injuries in the document. I guess they were just under severe time pressure to get the job done properly. If only someone would set up some sort of task force to investigate these sort of time-sensitive and high-pressure matters, then maybe, I don't know, just maybe someone could do something about it. Now, concerning workplace safety, the TWU cites a 2019 Safe Work Australia study which found road transport workers remain the most likely to be killed at work, with a fatality rate of 9.4 times higher than the average across all industries. And, yep, yes, I'm being told that, yep, that includes going to war. Weird. With the nation in need and the threat of lockdowns, it looks like we're going to have to figure out how to get this system the numbers it needs in our time of need. So we will be conscripting Centrelink recipients to use as delivery riders for people with real jobs who can't leave the house right now. You know how it is. Serve for your country. Deliveroo, in association with Centrelink, presents a government contract that won't be overpaid. What a unique and interesting concept that is. And it seems I've gone so far as to solve the pork barreling issue as well. You're welcome, Australia. two issues with a single news story. Look, as long as they're angry at Soundlink recipients for insisting that they stay alive, whatever that means, then they can give the government contracts to Soundlink employees. Won't matter that they're not properly trained, because when there's a problem, we'll just do the old recipient shuffle, like they do with ministers. Just imagine the sorts of experience you'll get as you move from location to location, from government contract to government contract. You'll just be able to pad out that resume with all sorts of useful and helpful skills thanks to your new friends, the government, as they attempt to plaster over the holes in their organization with nothing but band-aids and thoughts and prayers. A time-honored tradition. Now, on to voter fraud news! A man admitted to using his dead mother's name to vote for Trump. And I must say, it doesn't really surprise me that small business owner Norman Bates is a Republican voter. He has no real respect for women's personal space. The dead mother demographic is one overlooked by both parties as they waffled on about the future, the youth, and the slowly decomposing job market. But who has more future to worry about than dead people, lingering on in their non-living, non-dead state of unlife forever and ever as more and more young people bang on about the difficulties of living? Well, what about the difficulties of being an undead? The rotting, the wandering, the world seeking to quell a deep, dark, insatiable emptiness that is only ever temporarily stopped by the supple taste of human brains. No one ever talks about that. This man has blamed isolation and too much propaganda for his choice, making him maybe patient zero for the latest plague. Get ready for it, it's a good one. Foxitis! Told you it was a good one. So just like the Delaware rioter charged over the Capitol attack in January, whose lawyer has proposed the unique defense of foxitis. Anthony Antonio, who is facing 5 charges, including violent entry, disorderly conduct, and impeding law enforcement during civil disorder, is claimed to have fallen prey to the persistent lies about the so-called stolen election being spread daily by Donald Trump and the right-wing network that served him. And given his propensity for being dragged into long-form fictional stories, he presumably also fell prey to the Thanos was Right movement. He has taken a violent defense of Team Iron Man storming the Avengers Tower and was likely just waiting for the battle lines to be drawn in the inevitable Mr. Men Wars. You can't have 30 years of extended continuity without there being continuity errors that will eventually divide the embittered camps. Come on, make your choice. Mr. Tickle is wrong and needs to be cancelled. It's hard to admit now, but seems Trump was right. The dangers of voter fraud do exist. He did, however, fail to mention which side was doing the fraud. But hey, even acclaimed prophet and first futurist to write a New York Times best-selling book, Nostradamus, made a few mistakes in his time, and in future times, and in most times, really. But he really was ahead of his time. Now, just don't tell Smartmatic or Domain, because they are suing Fox for billions of dollars for spreading lies about their role in the theft of the election. And this finding out that there really was voter fraud is really going to put a dent in their chances of actually successfully suing Fox News. And I think we'd all prefer that they succeeded. The blaming of Fox News is the news media embodiment of the Chicken Little story, where a chicken, worried that the sky is falling, leads a bunch of birds into the forest where they meet a sly fox who, taking advantage of their moral panic, sets up a TV opinion show, broadcasts it in the style of news on a news station, makes millions of dollars driving up outrage and moral panic over nothing. Then, when they finally storm the castle to save the king from the villains of their imagined nightmares, the king has them all arrested, executed, and then the king and the fox share a nice turducken dinner. Or at least, that's how I remember it ending. I think I had it in the original German, where the main character was named Killing Cluck, and her gang of foul friends were the Killing Cluck Clan. On to the very reasonable act of stalking children news! Yes, that's right, you heard correctly. Where did this action happen? New Zealand, the future home of billionaires who failed to abandon the planet after the apocalypse. Now, despite what you may think about New Zealand, it isn't a bastion of peace and kindness. They have protests too, but their protests are more about global events that they didn't cause themselves, or attacks on dogs. That is a true thing that happened, and you really should look it up because it's quite interesting. Now, school children from the group School Strike for Climate joined a peaceful protest against the oil exploitation company OMV in New Plymouth. Weeks after unprecedented numbers joined their September 27th school strike marches around New Zealand. Now, these damn kids can't appreciate anything, can they? Born into the most technologically advanced society ever in a country that all the billionaires have hand-picked to build their survival bunkers in because, according to Business Insider, it's likely to survive climate change. The very climate change that these children are protesting. Hypocrites! But a 2-year investigation has found that these children and other climate change groups were targets of the private investigation firm Thompson and Clark, who I'm referring to as the Lewis and Clark of Thompson and Clark, the Lewis and Clark of stalking protesting children. Now, I don't want to cause distress to any of my listeners, so please be warned, the following statement is quite shocking. Give you a second to brace yourselves. 3, 2, 1. Thompson and Clark were paid by clients from the oil and gas industry and industry lobby group, the Petroleum Exploration and Production Association of New Zealand. I know. The oil and gas companies are usually very respectable citizens. I'm just as disappointed as you are that they paid somebody to stalk children. I'll give you a moment here to collect your thoughts as you realize how far the gas and oil companies have fallen in your mind. 3, 2, 1. Okay, you should be good by now. Let's move forward. This investigation reveals that a major focus of Thompson and Clark in 2019 and 2020 was monitoring and helping to counter citizen groups concerned about climate change. Definitely a highlight of any business portfolio is when they can point to a year of mostly stalking peaceful protests and children. It's like being Employee of the Year for ISIS. Just such a proud moment for you all. Information about Thompson and Clark's clients and anti-environmental activities was provided confidentially by company insiders who say they disapprove of the private investigation company and they should be careful because operations against these groups were run by Thompson and Clark's collection manager, the former long-term New Zealand Security Intelligence Service officer, known only as Jerry, who moved to Thompson and Clark 10 years ago after 30 years with the New Zealand SIS. Fucking Jerry. Now that guy has no qualms with professionally stalking and cataloguing the movements of children. He is certainly already forming his team of spies, which is actually just him wearing no shirt and a red headband, probably carrying a rifle of some kind. Or he did until the gun ban. Fucking Australia, just ruining everything for all New Zealanders. So now instead he carries a high-powered paintball gun instead of a rifle. As he stalks children through the forest, a one-man army of unstoppable power. And a movie will one day be made about him. Jerry. I'm sure it'll be very stirring. Maybe he'll be played by Vin Diesel. Eternally inaccessible property market news! Houses. If you make enough money, they also come in non-shoe form. Australia's housing market has been a real problem for many years, and The Guardian revealed that only 3 rental properties in Australia are considered affordable for a single person living on the government's boosted job seeker payment of less than the cost of a cup of coffee per day, even in a shitty coffee shop. Now, the pandemic has reduced rents in some markets, but the largest update to Anglicare's rental affordability snapshot of more than 74,000 properties found affordability remained dire for people living on welfare. Now, if we look at the market fluctuations, we see that houses of straw have improved greatly after taking an early tumble. However, houses of sticks just won't stack up, and Mayfair is just too much to pay for even without houses on it. So really, we're in a lot of problems here. Now, the Morrison government lifted the permanent rate of JobSeeker student and parenting payments by about $50 a fortnight, taking the base rate of unemployment benefits to about $44 a day. However, when the coronavirus supplement ended, it meant welfare payments actually fell rather than lifted. Now, they fell by about $100 a fortnight. So in this case, the word lifted is doing a lot of heavy lifting, as it is more like power lifting in that it shoots up suddenly, only to slam back down immediately, and all we do is talk about the going up portion despite the slam back down being dangerous, brash, and somewhat impressive. The Anglicare snapshot found that there were 3 affordable listings across Australia for people on JobSeeker, a country of 24 million people and 7.62 million square kilometres, and is, according to some internet forums that I've read, full. The properties were all shared accommodations, which is just going to make the internet people even angrier, given how full that they insist we already are. Now we have to stack up inside houses? What's next, bunk beds? This place is just so full. In spite of a major surge in listings, neither Melbourne nor Sydney had any affordable listings for a person on JobSeeker. Anglicare said, and frankly, why should there be? They are already looking for jobs, apparently not very hard, as they have had time to attend JobSeeker meetings. Might as well use that spare time that they have to try and find a house. Maybe a government can set up a payment for that too. House Seeker. But in exchange for House Seeker, you have to apply for 20 houses a month, and they will be setting up a hotline to inform on you if you're caught rejecting a house or insincerely applying for a house, say maybe calling the ad specifically for female applicants when you are a man, but you still apply anyway. Seems to be the going way. The analysis used the common benchmark that an affordable home is no more than 30% of a person's household budget. So in April last year, when the government planted the magic money tree and doubled JobSeeker with the coronavirus supplement, the snapshot found that 1,040 of the 69,960 nice homes would be affordable for a single JobKeeper. Without that boosted rate, the April 2020 figure would have been 9 homes. Just enough to wipe out your opponent on the Monopoly board. Take that, Stephen. You don't even know how to play. The 2019 report found only 2 homes were affordable for a single person on the then base rate of New Start, which was around $40 a day. So that extra $4 is really paying off already. It has truly lifted us up, a whole household. The Anglicare report came only a month after bans on evictions and rent increases expired in most states. It said some renters have found themselves tens of thousands of dollars in rental arrears. If they can't afford to repay their landlords, they face the very real prospect of eviction. On top of it all, cuts to JobSeeker, youth allowance, and other payments came into effect at the beginning of April. Anglicare Australia's executive director, and not at all that Casey Chambers, said, despite suggestions the economy was bouncing back, the snapshot showed many Australians are being left behind. Which might be best, because it seems behind is where the housing is most affordable. You know, behind in the past. Why, even the new rate of JobSeeker, which was so low that there are even fewer affordable rentals than there were on the old rate of Newstart, all the more reason to live a temporally displaced lifestyle, maybe in the 1950s, the 1960s, or the 1970s, when education was free. The choice is yours. The government argues the economy has recovered and people are... no longer need to rely on temporary supports, such as boosted benefits. Nor would they need to if the government made them somewhat less temporary and much more permanent. Because if there's one thing this government has been good at, it is taking a temporary measure and making it permanent. Shout out to Nauru and Manus. Shout out to hotel detention. Maybe that's the solution here. These people need homes, and the government won't supply them with enough money to survive. So, if they try to smuggle themselves into the country, then the government can find each and every one of them a private home. And if they are from Melbourne, they will be accustomed to not leaving their homes by now anyway. So this seems like the best way to go. The government is way more willing to spend money to keep people in detention than it is to keep people fed and housed. The ball is in your court. Homeless pause. On to job news now. Job news. Centrelink, where you should go if you need money. Please note this product is meant for electioneering purposes only. Any resemblance to real assistance is purely coincidental. Void in so many conditions. Some assembly required, batteries not included. Content may be unlawfully seized by governments. Use only as directed. And sometimes don't do it that because the directions are wrong and unhelpful. No other warranty expressed or implied. Do not use while needing to pay rent and eat. Quite a few conditions apply. A recent survey showed that the mutual obligation system does not improve the likelihood of getting a job, unless, of course, you want a job in the burgeoning field of bullying job seekers. This year's hottest rising trend. Privatised job agencies concluded welfare mutual obligations did not improve the likelihood of employment for job seekers in unreleased evidence to a government commissioned review for the Disability Employment Services program. But they do improve the likelihood of partaking in pointless busy work, which is an important skill to develop in the journey towards finding work. Your special skills should include Microsoft Word Suite, customer service, cash handling, and doing pointless busy work without complaint. Guardian Australia revealed a report by Boston Consulting Group had found recent reforms to the $1 billion a year scheme had delivered a windfall to privatised job agencies, but not improved outcomes for the unemployed. So, business as usual for the industry of getting people into the very bottom of the barrel of businesses. The report shows employment consultants offered a scathing assessment of the mutual obligation system, saying the government might have some money if it took responsibility for policing mutual obligations away from employment service providers and handed it to Services Australia. They also risked suggesting another third party, but if we're going to allow a financially bloated, incompetent system to destroy the lives of our most vulnerable, it might as well be the government. Better the devil you're used to being screwed by, hey? At least they know how you like to be rubbed the wrong way and will happily oblige. However, the draft version of the Boston Consulting Group report, also obtained under Freedom of Information, goes further, revealing employers and job agencies are generally unsatisfied with the regime, saying providers also expressed considerable negativity towards the mutual obligation system overall, considering that it does not, on balance, improve the likelihood of employment. So it's good to know that nobody is happy with the system. I mean, you, at least this way, you couldn't say that we're screwing over the poor and disabled because these guys enjoy it. No, it's just for no reason at all. Which I think we can all agree is much better. The report also said similar negativity was expressed by several employer interviewees who expressed the view that mutual obligations job search requirements simply result in an excess of unsuitable applicants for advertised roles, which, if you live in Queensland or Victoria, will likely result in being dobbed in with 24% of all job seeker calls coming from Queensland and 33% coming from Victoria. Oof, guys, what are you doing? They said, I am disappointed that there's a small number who just aren't taking their mutual obligations seriously. Here's a fun quote. See if you can guess who said it. I am disappointed that there's a small number who just aren't taking their mutual obligations seriously. Who do you think might have said that? I'll give you a second to think about it. Ding, 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 ding. That was the Minister for Employment and man who stole $37 million from the government through defrauding them via a fake family business and is still somehow in a job, Stuart Robert. I tell you, it's very disappointing when you have an expectation that someone will act honestly and then they go to great lengths to deceive you. Isn't it, Stuart? He has also expressed disappointment that people are lying to get into jobs. I mean, do they want people to have jobs or not? You've got to commit to your values here, Robert. You yourself have done a number of jobs that you have no qualifications for, such as Assistant Minister to the Treasurer, Minister for the National Disability Insurance Scheme, Minister for Government Services, Minister for Employment, Workforce, Skills, Small and Family Business. After all, we have already established that you lied about your family business. Remember that? When we established that just a moment ago? Yeah, that was a good time. Although the nation's unemployment rate figures released in May suggest unemployment sits at 5.5%, that doesn't really mean what you think it means. Let's have a look at this video here. This will talk us through unemployment stats a little bit more.
The ABS first figures out how many people are in the working age population. That's Australians aged 15 and over. The majority will form part of the labour force. But not everyone can work or is looking for a job. Some will be retired, others are caring for someone, studying, travelling, in prison, or belong to a religious order. others may have just given up looking for work. Those people aren't counted as part of the labour force and are excluded from the unemployment rate.
So, anyone dobbed into the hotline is at risk of having their welfare payments suspended. But this doesn't stop our Minister for Trade, Tourism and Investment, seen here, displaying his superior knowledge and his most definite right to be in Parliament making important decisions, Dan Tehan.
Without grades, how would we mark a geography student who didn't know that Africa is a country?
Yes, folks, that is our former education minister and current tourism minister knowing what a country is, like definitely demonstrating what a country is. And here he is, urging Victorian workers to go to Centrelink if they lose their income due to the state's latest lockdown. Let's all watch, shall we?
You know, if you work at a restaurant, a cafe, a bar, a gym and so on, you don't have work for a week, you don't have an income, what do they get?
Well, you can go to Centrelink, and if you're eligible, if you've lost a complete week's work or if you're going to leave 2 weeks' work, then you might be eligible for one of these emergency health payments.
So, the government didn't want to pay out-of-work people and actively encouraged them to turn to government service and beloved government punching bag, Centrelink. And will they be eligible for such payments? Especially given that Centrelink is a notoriously slow service with many hoops to leap through. Let's see, shall we?
And that wasn't my reading of it. Are you saying to us this morning that if you don't necessarily have COVID, you're not necessarily close contact, but if you are nonetheless affected by the lockdown, you can access one of these payments?
If you've lost your income, and obviously it depends on eligibility, and you're going to lose your income for the week, then you should go to Centrelink and see whether you might be eligible for an emergency payment.
Are you eligible if you don't have COVID? Are you announcing a new government policy position here that you can get the payment?
This is not a new government policy.
So you can't get the payment if you don't have COVID or you're not a close contact?
Well, what I'm saying is you should, if you've lost all your income, and then you should go to Centrelink and see whether you're eligible for payments.
And what will they say? What will they say? If you don't have COVID or you're not a close contact?
I mean, David, it will depend on your circumstances.
Oh. So it's a gamble now. I thought only a few types of gambling were legal in Victoria. I'm going to have to look it up. Yep, here it is. It's poker machines, casino games, online sports betting, keno, lotteries, bingo. Oh, wait, yep, here it is. Wagering, yep, cool, got it. That's when you gamble with your workers' wages, right? That's what wagering is, isn't it? I'm pretty sure that's what the definition is. How is that legal, by the way? How is that a legal thing? Well, it's on the books. It seems we're over a barrel on this. Oh, hang on a minute. What's this coming in? What's that? Breaking news alert. The federal government is allowing for new support payments across the nation. Oh, okay, all right. Well, hang on, breaking news again. Seems there are a few caveats. Let's have a look here. They shouldn't really be a problem overall. After all, it's supposed to support people in need. So let's have a look at these caveats. All right. First, payments will only kick in if lockdown is longer than a week. Well, look, seems a little long to make people wait, but still, the rest must be pretty easy, right? There must be a federally designated hotspot. Well, I mean, that surely won't be a problem. So at the moment, Melbourne is a designated hotspot and regional Victoria got screwed. Sorry, whoopsie. Whoops, big whoopsie from the federal government there. You need to be 17, which isn't too bad. You've been an Australian citizen, permanent resident, or a visa holder. Getting a little excluded here, but let's go on. while you don't have to have used up all your annual leave, you must have insufficient other entitlements. So if you have sick leave, despite the fact that you actually won't be able to collect it, you can't get support. Weird that one. Alright, so it's $500 for people who normally work more than 20 hours, and $325 for those who normally work less. But you have to have less than $10,000 in liquid assets, because despite the fact that they will tell you time and again to just save money. Like if you're having trouble, to budget and save money. If you actually manage to come out of it with any sort of support or possibility of social mobility, then you best get back down in the muck, you dirty job seeker. So let me get this right. Employers who brought a job seeker? No. You sit down. You're still good. You won't have to pay that back anytime soon. Oh, and here we go. It can't be combined with other welfare or support payments. So if you choose to follow government advice and go to Centrelink, then you can't get government support. A perfect circle of cutting off the needy from the public teat. Moving on now to whistleblower news. Experts. The people who spend multiple years of their life studying a topic to such a fine degree that they could potentially change the world, only to be told to fuck right off on the internet. Hey experts, I could be told to fuck right off without a doctorate. Gotcha. World-renowned Dutch expert in identifying scientific misconduct and error, Dr. Elizabeth Bick has been threatened with legal action for questioning the integrity of a study promoting the drug hydroxychloroquine to treat COVID-19. You remember hydroxychloroquine? The little rinky-dink drug that could, who suddenly had their life changed when a surprise mention by a former steak salesman and excommunicatee from Twitter, Donald Trump.
And the other thing that we've bought a tremendous amount of is the hydroxychloroquine.
The case, filed with the French state prosecutor by a controversial infectious diseases physician and man you could have sworn was selling weed, Dr. Didier Raoult, you remember him, we all saw his face, has prompted hundreds of scientists from across the world to publish an open letter calling for science whistleblowers to be protected. As such, Beaker has been rushed into protective custody after he whistleblew on Muppet Labs for the atrocious.
You can even store a whole bunch this way.
Treatment of lab assistants.
Isn't that snazzy? Now these carrots are perfectly ordinary in every way except that they are magnetic. Yes, friends, you can carry these new magnetic carrots home on the roof of your car and store them on the ceiling of your refrigerator. Oh, of course, to be perfectly honest, there is one slight drawback. Sometimes the magnetic carrots tend to attract steel rabbits.
The illegal genetic modification and cloning.
Beaker, what were you doing in there? If you've broken that machine, I shall have to dump your salary. You beside yourself.
In contradiction of all ethical laws, as well as actual laws that will get you in trouble, unless you're rich. In March 2020, Bick published a blog post analysing a paper led by Raoult, raising questions about the paper's methodology, but probably most importantly pointed out 6 patients enrolled in the treatment group at the beginning of the study were not accounted for by the end and were missing from the data. Dr. Bick said, very reasonably, what happened to the other six treated patients. Why did they drop out of the study? Three of them were transferred to the intensive care unit, presumably because they got sicker, and one died. It seems a bit strange to leave these four patients who got worse or who died out of the study, just on the basis that they stopped taking their medication, which is pretty difficult once the patient is dead. Now, I'm not here to side with this shyster or contradict the world-renowned good doctor, but being dead is the easiest way to stop taking medication. You'll never take that medication again. Now, all of this happened before Trump promoted Rahul's paper and the use of hydroxychloroquine for COVID. And I don't want to get you all excited, but guys, we might finally have that evidence that we need to finally take him down. Hang on, what's that? Oh, he's not in power anymore? No, never mind. What's that? Even if he was in power, this wouldn't stop him? Yeah, you're right. No, never mind. Bic, who is hired as a consultant by scientific institutions worldwide to analyze data and identify research misconduct, went on to identify image duplication and potential ethical issues in 62 published articles from Rahul and his institute. Dr. Bunsen Honeydew might be negligent of his staff and animals, but his experiments almost always worked. At the very least, I have been unable to find any negative reviews of the studies that have come out from Muppet Labs. Rahul's colleague and man at a fancy dress party trying to remember what doctors say, Professor Eric Chabarri, revealed on Twitter that he and Rahul have filed a complaint against Bic and Boris Barber, who helps run a not-for-profit website called PubPeer, which allows scientists to analyze and provide feedback on each other's work. Sort of like Twitter, but after you make a comment, you actually have to show you're working out at how you arrived at that conclusion. The legal complaint alleges harassment over Bic exposing data errors on PubPeer and extortion because she has a Patreon account where people can donate to her work, which has to make her the only scientist on Patreon. I don't know, I mean, I haven't looked extensively, but this is probably the only person actually getting paid to do science. Now, she has responded to Rahul's calls on Twitter to declare who is funding her by sharing links to her Patreon, which is just a class A move all the way. Hopefully he kicks in a couple of bucks to her Patreon just for the audacity of that choice. Lonnie Besancon, a French postdoctoral research fellow at Monash University in Australia, said he had also received multiple death threats from Rahul's supporters after raising concerns about Rahul's work, leading him and other international scientists to have published an open letter calling for the attacks on Bic to stop and for the scientific community to support her and other whistleblowers. When seen in Australia by the government, the impulse was to have the AFP swarm her office, seize her work, maybe dig through her underwear drawer for fun, and all just to send a message. But then they remembered to pull back on that knee-jerk reaction because it had nothing to do with them. Moving on to deplatforming news. Florida, America's Queensland. Florida is the first state in the US to attempt to punish social media companies that ban politicians under a bill approved by the state's Republican-led legislature. I can't think of what Florida would have against any social media company, so this should be a reasonable and even-handed bill. Let's have a look, shall we? The bill blocks social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter from knowingly deplatforming politicians and even algorithmically ranking content, with fines ranging from $25,000 to $250,000 per day. See? totally reasonable and not at all designed to mollycoddle the hurt feelings of one particular septuagenarian after being deplatformed from his favourite toy. The law has already been challenged in court by the tech company's trade organisations, which called it a frontal assault on the First Amendment. Shame they couldn't make it about the Second Amendment. We've seen that they will bend their minds into the wildest shapes to defend Second Amendment rights, no matter how hypocritical or deadly the results. But First Amendment's pretty good. First Amendment rights, I mean, it's still a bit of a gamble. You'll just trigger the woke signal which gets flashed in the night sky when they need Tucker Carlson to pull himself out of the slime pit that he calls a home to fight the forces of progress. But there's an easier way. One in which Carlson can stay in his swampy marsh. This law has an exemption for any information service, system, internet search on engine, and access software provider operated by a company that owns and operates a theme park or large entertainment complex in the state of Florida. So Universal Studios Florida can still ban anyone that they want from their social media platform, Yelp, but it's only negative reviews of Disney parks. The name's a bit of a mouthful, but it has great social features. You'll have a really good time if you jump on it. Republican state representative and strain of weed I accidentally ordered when I said their name near Alexa, Blaze Ingolia, said that exemption was included so that Disney Plus streaming service isn't caught up in on this. So hang on, Disney Plus can still ban anybody that they want? Well, that explains their prolonged and continued ban on Gungan Senator Jar Jar Binks from the extended Star Wars universe. This is an attack of the greatest magnitude, Disney. We saw you shadow banning his tweets on Medichloroquil and the possible impact it could have on the Mustafarian mystery plague that nearly infected Darth Vader. And now this? This is straight deplatforming, and it's disgusting. So all the platforms could simply go into group ownership of the smallest theme park in the world, contributing one ride each, and it could be built just about anywhere in Florida. You wouldn't need much. Seems your smallest competitor is World of Mazes in Townville, which consists of a giant two-level walkthrough maze, mini golf, an Ellie wheel, about three kids' rides, and a row of carnival games. So that's setting the bar pretty low. And if anything, the maze is the perfect theme park attraction for a social media company. And if anything, a maze is the perfect theme park attraction for a social media company themed park. You could call it the Terms and Conditions. And all the walls are just like littered with all of the rights that you gave away by signing up to this free platform. I think it's genius. We'll make a ton of money. Have your people call my people. We'll create the maze. And we've come to the end of another episode of Bearer of Weird News. Thank you for your time. Thank you for listening. Thank you so much for sticking through. Those of you who have listened before, thanks for coming back. Those of you who are new, thanks for taking a chance. I hope that you will hang around and listen to more episodes. If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend, tell somebody that you know who you think might enjoy it, pass it on. It's really the easiest way to support me. Give me a nice review on whatever platform it is that you listen to this. As I've said in the past, either one star or five stars or don't bother. That's the only way this is going to fly. Anything in between is just cowardice. So, if you want, pass on word. I don't have anything particularly booked in terms of live shows coming up. It's a bit of a weird time at the moment. I don't really have anything locked down, and I've got a lot going on outside of performance, so that's held back a lot of that, and that's why this has been a bit slow to put out. But thank you for your time. Thank you for your patience, And I do hope you've been enjoying these. Please pass them on, tell somebody, and when you get a chance, come see me do some live shows. It's going to be a ton of fun. I do have a great show in the works. It's just going to be a while before it gets going. It's probably going to be next year. See you later. Stay safe. Look after yourselves. Wash your hands. And wear a mask when you need to. Bye.